And welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 856. We're talking some strategy for the last, you know, two-thirds or so of the fantasy baseball season. And it's going to be a doozy, folks. We got a good friend of mine, a good friend of the show. He's a future NFBC Hall of Famer. He made a strong case for himself with just quite the jersey, and we're hoping for the full sweatsuit this next year in Las Vegas. He won four main events last year, and had a few competing towards the end for the overall crown. He is a previous online championship, OC for those keeping it short, overall champion. He is Mr. One Time, that's one, W-O-N, and time himself. The Guilds, how we doing, my friend?
Bubba, thanks for having me, man. And you said future Hall of Famer. I mean, I like to consider myself a present Hall of Famer, but just haven't gotten that jacket yet. But yeah, I do appreciate the kind words. And, you know, if you want to expand on any of those achievements, some more as we go on, I don't mind that as well. So
I know. I figured you wouldn't, and I had to throw the future because for those of us that were hanging out in Vegas this year, you were awesome during the whole ceremony on Saturday where people were getting their plaques and all this stuff. And I was ready for you just to walk up there and like claim your spot. It was awesome. Like it was good coming from the back of the room. So
yeah, my intro, I forget who I was telling. I think it was maybe Waxman or somebody. I was like, I feel like it was very abbreviated, or I think it was Winokur. I was telling him, I felt like I should at least given, you know, a longer intro and even my own section of the stage, I thought at a certain point, but it wasn't to be. So it was a nice time overall, though.
Yes, very, very good time. We're going to talk a lot of like what we're all like, how the season's going, how to approach the rest of the season, so on and so forth. But I guess I'll ask you some stuff about your teams personally to start things out. But before that, I know it's a touchy subject. I got to talk Mets just real quick with you. What are we doing with, I guess, how do I say this? Like Freddy Peralta is probably going to get traded. Jonah Tong was a popular stash this week. Marcus Semien's not great. Vientos isn't great. I guess, how do we view the team for fantasy purposes? Because there's a lot of players we all love. Like, hey, Francisco Alvarez is actually ahead of schedule, which is a plus. Yeah. But like, what are we thinking? Like, what fantasy players should we be still excited about?
Oh, man. I think the list is pretty short. I mean, obviously, Soto, the numbers are going to be there. I wouldn't worry about him in the least. You know, he'll finish the year 35-plus homers, 100 RBIs, probably 100 runs. Outside of him, though, you're not too excited. And I do think, you know, you might see a trade here or there. Bo Bichette's interesting because obviously no one's going to want to pay his salary. But Steve Cohen has shown in the past a willingness to eat a lot of, you know, sunk costs, if you will. It would not shock me if, you know, he paid a portion of that, because now he has opt-outs. It's kind of confusing his contract over the next 2 years, but it would not shock me if he's dealt. He's been a freaking disaster. He'd actually have to start playing well before they could deal him, obviously, but yeah, you're pretty much stuck with these Mets. Semien's, you know, he's dog water. He's completely washed. I think everyone knew that when the trade happened, and it's kind of just gone as we all expected, outside of David Stearns, for some reason, thought that was a good deal for the Mets. Vientos, he's trash. He is what he is. I'm tired of seeing him in the lineup every day. But Beatty, he is what he – I mean, they got all these guys. They're like quad A guys, and you can't trade them, right? Nobody's going to want them. Their value is so low. You got Lindor coming back at some point. Obviously, you're just going to hold him. There's really not much you could do in terms of fantasy. You just got to keep rolling these guys out there, the ones that, you know, you should be playing at least. Peralta is interesting. I could definitely see him being dealt for sure. So you're not going to lose much value. Probably will gain value. He'll go to a decent team, you would think. Clay Holmes, if he comes back and starts pitching and he shows he's healthy, he'll be traded, I'm sure. He's in the final year of his contract. So, yeah. Devin Williams, he's stuck here. Nobody's trading for that contract.
Nope.
The long and short of it is, if you have Mets, you're pretty much just stuck with these guys and just got to hope for the best, you know?
All right, I apologize. Just had to get last time we talked on Bench with Bubba, you were doing a Mets preview, so I wanted to get that out of the way beforehand. Like I get tortured with my Giants talk because it's a disaster as well. But let's talk about something. You know,
No one saw this Mets. I mean,
no,
we all kill Mets Stearns. I kill Stearns. No one saw this Mets season happen. I mean, their over under was what, 88, 89 games.
Yeah,
they were a trendy pick to win a division. I mean, things just could not have gone worse than they have. And every single move David Stearns has made has pretty much just gone to dirt. Like he's been as bad as you can possibly be as a GM. And it's just, it's looking bleak right now.
It's looking pretty bleak, but there's always next year, as they say. Let's talk some fantasy baseball now or some more fantasy baseball. We'll start things off with kind of the early season thoughts before we kind of transition into what should we be, I guess, thinking for the rest of the season. And to start things off, I'll just kind of get a generic, like, how's the season going for you? You're in the Champions League this year, which is a big accomplishment and a wild card for many out there. You're doing your main events as usual, your OCs. How's the season looking for the Gilts?
It's looking pretty good overall. And at CLQ, I'm sitting fourth. I kind of bounced from second to fourth the last couple of weeks. I'm doing the ultimate DC. I've been, top three, four there. My OCs are doing really well. I think about five of them are in first, I think, the last I checked. Got a couple top 50-ish, so right where I want to be there. And the mains. So the mains, I started the year really rough in all four of them. And I was like, this is kind of, payback for my last year, right? So just now I'm starting to gain some traction where I'm actually doing pretty well in two of them. And the other two are fairly decent as well. But there's one of my four mains that I think has a chance. It's just starting to catch some fire on the offensive side. And then I think it's elite pitching. And it has the bats. And it has the offense. It's like you have to kind of be able to look at your teams and be realistic, of what they can do moving forward. And I think that team that has the pitching, I think it has the bats and the offense there. It's just a matter of, them producing and trying to rally up that leaderboard.
That'll be a big discussion point coming up here in a bit, as I want to kind of decide how do we know this, what gives you the thoughts and so on and so forth, and how to continue to attack that team. We'll get to that in a minute, but it dawned on me again while we were talking here, because you got your Champions League team. You did another AC while you're there. Basically, you did a couple live auctions, and those are your first auctions. How are we feeling about the auction teams versus your snake teams? Because you've crushed snakes for years. That's not a surprise to anybody. But it was cool seeing your juices get flowing there when you're doing the auction. Because I started auctions like 2 years ago. This was my first live one this year, but it's a completely different beast, and it's just it's awesome. So how are you feeling? It's been like 2 months into the year now.
Yeah, pretty well. I mean, the CLQs, that's been top, three the whole season. I felt pretty good about that team. So I had the 1600 auction championship as the first one. So I kind of had that as my test run. And that one's not going that great. I'm sitting in ninth, 85 total points. I mean, it could be worse. I've kind of been between, sixth through ninth or 10th the whole season. That one, I think Waxman is leading the overall in that league, and which is funny because he showed up. He was like annihilated the morning. He came in like 10 minutes late. His hair is all messy. Like he was still drunk.
He was drafted off his phone for the first at least 15, 20 players. He's literally just looking at his phone. It was awesome.
And he's sitting first overall. So being in that kind of condition and drafting a team that obviously, right now, end of May has a chance to contend is pretty fucking amazing. So good for Zach.
Yeah, but it's cool. I'm glad you're seeing how it goes. I'm hoping we get to do some more live drafting next year. I guess time will tell on that one. That's
just the draft experience alone, for sure. I loved it. I loved every second of it. it was just fun. Totally different than the snake draft. Just, yeah, like everyone says, it's true. You got to at least try it once. And once you do it, you're going to. I haven't heard of anyone that did an auction and be like, I didn't like that. It's just, they're just fun. It's just competitive. You know, there's some, you know, tells going on and some strategy at the end, you know, in the end game that you don't get with these snake drafts. So I'll definitely be doing them moving forward for sure.
Beautiful. All right. Let's talk about a couple different, I guess, strategies so far this season that you maybe are, it's a common theme or something you might be dealing with because you're obviously playing a handful of leagues. But when we look at a lot of the different, I guess, conundrums in baseball right now, the closing situation is a big one. That is one of those topics that has been attacked. If you were streaming a million different potential closers this week, you have a bunch of committees. You only have a hand like Cade Smith, the only guy that seems like he's him and Mason Miller every single day. So like they're showing the 80th percentile right now is like low 20s, which is nuts to think about from our normal game. So I guess my question to you is, how are you attacking this weekly grind of potential closers right now?
Yeah, see, the problem is I wasted a lot of my fab early on a bunch of these spec guys. Jake Junis for one, Cole Sands another. Like, can we talk about Jacob Junis for a second? Like, I've had
that was amazing.
Have we ever seen someone have three saves in a row, right? Mm-hmm. And then never get a save opportunity again? I mean, has that ever happened in the history of fantasy baseball?
Legendary. Unlikely.
Like, the guy did nothing to lose that job, and then he was just relegated to freaking middle innings, middle relief, and never saw another save. So that was strange. But, yeah, so a lot of my teams that were struggling in saves, I blew about, you know, 200-300 on him and Cole Sands and a couple other guys. Who's the Cubs flavor of the week for a week before he got hurt? You know, I lost some money on him. Caleb Thielbar. Yep. Brad Keller, I picked up, you know, thinking Duran was going to be out, you know, a good month and a half. And he was out, I don't know, what, 3-4 weeks tops. Yep. Maybe got a save or two out of him. But it's been rough, man. I don't know what to say. It's everyone needs saves, right? So it's almost like you just got to get one really good closer and just kind of hope to nab a couple here and there off the wire. And then maybe you could contend with 40, 45 saves end of the season. If you could get that, that might be enough, you know?
That's kind of where I'm at. Like, give me one guy I can trust. And I'm sitting there, I've been saying, hey, if you give me a guy that I think it's like 60% of the team saves, I'm over the moon. Or like week to week, I'm just going to try to take a guy that might run into one or two. Like I was talking with Ben Tidd on Monday's show over like the last 2 weeks, majority of people with saves got two saves, basically a save a week. Like it's crazy. And I'm not talking like scrubs, like, you know, Louis Varland had two, Jeff Hoffman had two, Devin Williams had two. Like these are guys we trust to get saves. Right. It's not happening. And so it's like, get whatever you can for cheap. If there's a committee, roll your dice for cheap. That's kind of where my brain's been at with the clothes for the most part. I've taken a few stabs, but I've never seen a season like this before. It's absolutely nuts.
This is the most absurd season. I mean, this is the year that everything is just kind of insane, just whacked. I have Robert Suarez on a bunch of teams, and I'm like scared to drop him.
Yeah, it's just the second you do, you know, it's horrible is about to happen.
That's it. Yeah, you know, Iglesias, you know, tears his shoulder or something, or who knows. I don't know. To me, that's just a guy you kind of have to hold. You know, worst case scenario, he's a dominant middle reliever. You could throw in there, you know, late in the season to kind of stabilize your ratios. But in this climate, I mean, I can't foresee dropping a guy like that just because any day, you know, something happens to Iglesias, you know, you're getting a top 3-4 closer, right? So, and it, you know, we could probably touch on this at some point too. I'm not a slave to like these stash or these golden roster spots that people like cling on to. And God forbid you're stashing a guy, or I'm stashing. I have three catchers in some leagues. Like, to me, it's way overblown, the roster spots. And I forget who I was. Maybe it was Cerebro one day was going back and forth. And God forbid, you know, God forbid you're stashing a guy because of the opportunity costs of adding somebody else. I'm like, do you know how much money is wasted on Fab, like, every week? Like, the amount of Fab pickups that actually produce and are beneficial to your team, it's a very, very low percentage. So I'm not against stashing at all. And to me, 7 roster spots is almost too much on a bench. I'd like to see it drop down to like 5. And then we can see some really tough decisions. Yeah, then we can see some really tough decisions. Owners have guys on their bench they haven't played all season. Yep. And they're just sitting there collecting dust. So I don't want to hear about, you know, the bench is so thin. You got guys rotting there that you haven't played all year. So I think it's overblown. Just my two cents.
No, I love it. I this is why I wanted to have the show with you tonight, because I know you have your strong takes, but you back them up. And then it's a different approach. A lot of the stuff you hear out there is a lot of cautious stuff for the most part, or do X, Y, and that. So that's why I love having these other angles to have you on to discuss this. And we'll jump to that right now, and then we'll come back to where we're at on the outline. Like, people do talk about, like, yeah, one spot for a stash, or it's getting late in the year, can you stash, so on and so forth. Like, I picked up a ton of Blake Snell this past week. I'm like, I know it's 2 months, I get it, but, like, you've played this game long enough. I'm in the NFBC, this is probably year 5 or 6 for me now, where I'm starting to realize if I have a decent team and I can stash a Snell and, knock on wood, get 2 to 2.5 months out of Blake Snell, I'm going to be pretty freaking pumped on that, and I'm going to take that chance, to your point of the opportunity cost and all the other stuff. So how do you approach, like, you named one, like, oh, you have 3 catchers. Oh, no, that's a no-no, Gilds. We can't have 3 catchers on a roster. Can't be doing that. But, like, you're not dropping Drake Baldwin. Wherever I have Drake Baldwin, Baldwin's on my bench right now, and I have 2 starting catchers. There's another, and that's just one example. So, like, how do you approach your roster formation, I guess, as the season comes along? Because, you know, we'll talk preseason. It's, oh, I want 4 pitchers and 3 hitters or blah, 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 whatever. That goes out the window when you start seeing the way your roster's playing for the most part. How are you approaching things at this point in the season?
Yeah, so I adjust each roster accordingly. So, like, for instance, my main that's really dominant in pitching right now, ratios, it's like a top 20 staff overall. My entire bench, I think, is batters. I might have one pitcher. Just I'm trying to maximize every at bat to try to catch guys that are on fire, just because I'm deficient on the offense. It's easy. It's by far. It's all pitching. So I know I need to catch up on the batting. So to me, I'm just trying to capitalize on all those available bats, you know, at my disposal. But other leagues where, you know, I need to catch up in wins and whatnot, it's the opposite. I might have like a Mauricio Dubon on my bench and you know, 6 pitchers, because I'm trying to just max out those innings and wins. Mm-hmm. I have an OC right now, which another one sitting around 50 or so. Great ratios, and it's deficient. It's low in wins, which is a dream scenario, because all you have to do is stream, right? You just obviously want your ratio stabilized. You could then stream the shit out of a team like that. When I won the overall, the biggest targets coming after me, I was watching every team. The teams that were low in wins that were still gaining decent amount of points, those were the teams that were scary, right? Because by then, your ratios are completely stabilized. You're not going to fall. You're not going to rise too much in the ratio categories. But the wins, you could really rise in late. So this one team I remember was really low in wins and had great ratios. So I'm like, this dude is just going to keep on streaming 2 steps against me. And that was the team that I think, you know, caught up, you know, at least 2nd or 3rd in that year. But yeah, the dream scenario to me is being low in wins and elite in ratios. And I'll just freaking throw starts, you know, at the wazoo every week just to catch up. And, you know, that's the one category where you can, you have somewhat control over, if you just throw the volume at it. So, it's just it's team dependent, you know, it's what you need. You know, if you need steals, obviously you're trying to capitalize on these speed guys and, you know, stashing guys that might have speed that, you know, could help you in 2, 3, 4 weeks down the road. That's what I did with O'Neill Cruz too. That one year where I took it down, I stashed him for like, I don't know, a good 6, 8 weeks, but I knew once he was up, you know, he was going to, you know, start running. And he actually helped me chase down that stolen base category. So, again, it's just team dependent. You got to know where you're deficient and then just kind of attack those categories. Really attack. Just hyper focus on those categories you need and just, you know, go balls to wall.
Yeah, and I've already started to do stuff like that. I know your team dependencies. I know there's a couple rosters. I know I have at least five pitchers on my bench just because I need all the stuff. Like my pitching's a disaster. I need the best matchups each week as possible is the way I'm looking at life. And it's like more of a 15 thing than a 12 thing because 15 is just so hard to find pitching in general. But, yeah, it's team to team. And I know there's one league I think I have five hitters because I'm just making sure I have everything covered to maximize. Like I want this guy for the first half of this week because this whole season – the Reds and the Rockies, they only play half weeks at each. There's no full weeks. So I'm like, oh, I don't want to drop these guys because the matchups are great later on, so on and so forth. And there's a lot of that going on certain rosters as well. Real quick, you mentioned it a handful of times in the beginning of that. When your ratios stabilize, I know what you mean by that. But when do you think, when is your opinion, do you feel confident that your ratios have stabilized? Because we talk about it a lot that, you know, ERA, WHIP, even batting average is harder to find, especially as the year goes on, because your sample size, yada, 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 that's the stabilization we're talking about. When do you feel that becomes a stabilized product so you can pivot to, say, the wins in other categories like that?
Yeah, I think we still have a ways to go there. You still see the swings in ERA and WHIP pretty drastic. So usually, I don't know, I usually say after June, you know, into the couple weeks into July, you still see some swings, but it starts slowing down, right? And then as you go into July, then August, you're pretty much where you're at, right? You're not going to see monster swings like you do, you know, even early June. We're still, you know, a good 4 or 6 weeks away from that point. I don't want to say it's too early because when I hear that, you know, I just cringe. People that say that, to me, it's too late. In my past experiences, and just being candid here, like all my teams that did well in these overalls, I started off fast, and I just kept getting my foot on the pedal the whole year. So I like getting off to hot starts. You know, I think it's kind of a fallacy that, oh, you could be, you know, 15th in your league in the middle of June. Don't ever give up. Listen, you could give up at some point. I'm here to tell you, you could definitely give up. I'm saying that in jest. I mean, there are points of no return when you're trying to contend for an overall. You know, people think you're still in it. You're not in it right now. If you're, you know, like we were talking about this offline, but there's a certain point right now where if you're this far back in the standings, you're not winning the overall. Even end of May, early June, you're not. You can still cash, maybe even win your league if it's, you know, not a strong league. But, yeah, if you're sitting, you know, 700, 800, you know, 900 in the standings right now, you're not winning the overall. I hate to break it to you. You're just not. And in the main, kind of, you know, I'd probably put that somewhere around 450, you know, 450, 500. If you're that far back, you're not winning it. It's just, you know, like I don't want to pour cold water on people's hopes here, but that's just the facts of these overalls. You know, there's a lot of teams ahead of you. There's a lot of shared players on these teams. I think there is a point where you need to be at, you know, per month kind of to keep trending in the right direction and actually be live to contend for the overall.
No, I don't. You're not wrong at all. And at worst, though, people could still try to win their league. If that's
what absolutely,
yeah, grind, yeah, grind that one on all year, but
that was more just overall, you know, overall,
the overall, oh, yeah,
winning the entire tourney. If you're looking at your team and you're sitting there 878th place right now in the OC, you're not winning it. I'm sorry, you're just not.
Nope,
there's totally there's a ceiling for your team, and it's not number one.
That is very fair, very, very fair. I want to bring up the fact you mentioned, you know, you like to stream. Guys, a lot of two pitch guys. One of my favorite tweets from you every week is the Thelma and Louise car driving off the side of the cliff. When you had, like this week, you had Tatsuya Imai and someone else on there. It's always
Shane Boz,
who was dominant tonight, yeah. Of course. There's always one or two just really like, whoa, what is Guild's doing here. And more often than not, it actually it seems like it works more often than not, crazy enough.
Well, so, this is my best season ever doing it. So honestly, if you go back and track my Louis starts, I probably, what are we, week 10 right now? So I might have missed a week or two of figure like 18 starts. I'm not kidding. I probably hit on about 14 of them.
I believe
it's been a high percentage.
I remember watching it going that way, and then like all of a sudden, like most of them pitch on Mondays, Bowser's is a Tuesday, of course. But like right out the game, like, damn, that worked out pretty well. Like that's going somewhere. So I guess where I'm going with this is, how do you decide? I guess who you're streaming, or is like I guess what's your? Because some people say I'm not going to start streaming certain pitchers because of certain matchups. And my point to this question is, your Thelma and Louises are a lot of matchups that are out of control. Players have struggled. So how do you approach that?
Well, I look at, there's a few factors. First off, you know, I look at opponents, like that's one of the top ones, right? Like Amai was facing the Rangers, who I think are atrocious on offense. You know, he usually has good K upside. I know he's been terrible. He's been awful. But I just saw that Rangers. I'm like, listen, that lineup is just horrid, right? So I couldn't see him getting blown up there. I thought worst case scenario, maybe he goes 5 innings, 2-3 runs, and he squeaks out a win. Obviously, 6 shutout innings, 6 no-hit innings. He did walk 4, I believe. It wasn't great, but still, ratio-wise, it was great. But usually I'm looking for guys on good teams, right? Because if I'm doing this, I'm trying to get wins, right, first and foremost. And if not wins, at least K's. And I figured even this week, you know, Shane Baz is usually good for K's. You know, I'm a big law of averages guys too. I'm like, and plus Shane Baz has been pretty good the last couple of starts. Yep. I don't know if people have been noticing. He's kind of, I don't know if he turned the corner, but he's been pretty good. And tonight he was even better. So really, I'm just looking for good matchups, K's, wins. And I'm willing to gamble, man. I know a lot of people aren't. And I just have that gamble in me, especially when it comes to fantasy. And yes, listen, it sometimes it backfires. You know, I'm not going to say it's perfect. It definitely is not. And it's, you know, it's not easy to just start guys like this and just hope you pick them right. But to me, you got to take chances. And sometimes, you know, they work out. Sometimes they don't.
I guess to build off of this, to kind of tie back to you, once your ratio stabilizes, you want to pound for wins. Well, starting two pitch pitchers is a great way to attempt to pound for wins, of course, to double your chances. How aggressive are you with, I guess, churning your rotation at that point? Because if you're not worried about the ratios as much and you want to probably maximize as many two starters as possible, like, are you keeping like 3 of your regulars and just churning the rest? How does your, I guess, pitching roster change at that point?
Yeah. Most of most of those two start. Mm-hmm. Oh, she's excited.
It's all good.
So most of those two start. Thelma and Louise pose. They're actually on teams with good ratios, which is funny because people think I'm like this crazy, you know, psycho fantasy player just throwing darts out there. But they're usually on teams that have good ratios and are just not doing well in wins. So those are kind of teams where I'm taking these chances kind of in the middle of the season, trying to catch up in that win category. But overall, you know, if I have a good staff, I don't really like to stream shaky guys. You know what I mean? Especially if I'm doing well in wins and ratios, you know, I'm never streaming really anybody. It's really just comes down to wins. You know, I don't like to fall too far behind in that category. And especially when, you know, teams aren't bidding on a lot of these pitchers I'm getting for $2-3 in the OCs. I'll take chances, you know, in the middle of the season doing that. But, it's really just a win play. And I'm not doing that really on teams that have, you know, ratios that are out of control for sure.
No, that makes sense for sure. I guess that also leads me to a few more questions about the aggressiveness that the Guilds has. And It's all every season. It's a point of discussion. I remember you're on James Anderson's show last year because of your Kyren Paris love, and the Guilds likes to spend his money, and he's not taking it to the postseason. Let's put it that way. He spends it early. He spends it often. He already mentioned, like, with the closing situation, he's not like in the streaming or the going after closers thing anymore because he did that early on. If there's a prospect, Guilds is usually on him. There's a lot of things. So I guess to my point is, I guess for people that maybe be new to the Guilds, what's your philosophy in getting aggressive that early? Because some people like to, you know, space out their fab throughout the year. You go get them and you're fine with like the dollar days later on, and you've been very successful in that. So kind of what's your approach to just going all in early? And then I guess how does it work for you going forward?
And it's a great question, Bubba. So yeah, I'm very aggressive early. I like the idea of getting the player for the maximum amount of time that you can, right? You want to maximize the productivity that player can offer, right? If I get a guy in, you know, end of April, you know, a rookie prospect, whatever that gets called up, and he hits, I get 5 months of production out of that player. So to me, spending $250 on a guy in April is way, way better than spending $250 on another guy in mid-July. You know what I mean? So I want to take advantage of that possible productivity that I could get all season long from that player. And to be honest, this year I was doing, you know, I have a ton of Walshmit on my team, AJ Ewan. I have a ton of like people were letting me have these players. Well, not letting me. I mean, I was obviously bidding a lot of money, but I was more than willing to go big on these guys because we have a ton of season left still, you know, four plus months to go. Like Walshmit, I got every, you know, not everywhere. I have 7 or 8 shares of the guy. He looks awesome. By the way,
I love that pickup. Yeah.
And he's hitting fifth tonight too. He keeps moving on up. He was just ninth a couple days ago, then up to sixth, now fifth. So waiting for the power to kick in a little bit, but I think he's got 5 stolen bases, hitting 320 something last I checked. So he looks good. AJ Ewan, he looks the part. I know the power is suspect, but to me, that's a guy that's going to be in the lineup all year long. So I'm happy with those buys. But yeah, Bubba, I like to be aggressive. I like to be able to hit those scenarios where I have, you know, that player for, you know, 4 or 5 months. And I feel like that I gain an edge on my, you know, my opponents by doing so. At the same time, if I swing and I miss, you know, on these guys, I'm then at a disadvantage, right? So to me, it's kind of a balance there. A risk reward. It's like, to me, but again, this is going for the overall. There's all the money's at the top. So in my eyes, I want to gamble. I want to take that risk. I want to be the guy that overpays. I don't care. Yeah. You know, if I overpay, if I want the guy, it doesn't matter to me. And I see all these efficient bids, tweets, whatever. And I'm just like, whatever, you know, I'll spend 150 more if it gets me the guy that I want. I don't care how much money I waste. I mean, believe me, if you'd see how much money I've wasted in fab over the years,
I'm aware.
it's absurd. Like, it's, you know, it's embarrassing, but at the same time, I love it because, you know, it's kind of my thing. You know, I stay on brand. So, yeah, to me, the better bids are the ones where I win by like 200 against a runner up, and the non-efficient. There should be a non-efficient waiver wire winners. I got to be top 5 there.
No, I'm trying to be more aggressive as things go along. I'm still not in the Guilds territory of that aggressiveness, but
by the way, OCs, that's more or less more so OCs. Like,
yeah, 100%, not 50.
Because owners, they do give up in that contest a lot sooner and a lot more frequently than in the main event. So it's even more imperative in the OC that I'm more aggressive early because I know I could get guys, you know, in July and August for a buck or two, because owners, you know, 9th, 10th, 11th place already, you know, doing fantasy football drafts. So, you know, it's format dependent too. That plays into it. But to me, the OC is a no-brainer. Go all in early. Give me $100 for 5 months. You know, I'll work it.
Yeah, I agree. Like the OC, I'm already seeing no runner-up bids on a lot of players and stuff. It's pretty wild.
Yeah,
it's out there. It's so early. I'm just like, so I've tried to be, but like there's one league I got Ewing and Bolte in the same week. I'm like, screw it, let's get them both. I need outfield help. So
yeah,
like it's just it's go get your guys and see where it goes and not be too worried about it. So I guess when you do swing and miss once in a while on these guys, because that's just law of averages. And as you mentioned earlier in the show, just in general, just fab pickups have not panned out this year. Like a handful have, but not many of them have. So that's just reality. How do you like know when to move on, just drop the player, I guess? Because some people think like, hey, I spent all this money, I have to hold on to it, but they figure it out. And that's just foolish for the most part. Maybe some guys can figure it out. For them, like if a guy doesn't have it, he's not going to have it. Maybe he might be going back to AAA, so on and so forth. How do you know when to, or what do you do like to tell yourself it's time to move on?
Yeah, I am not a guy that holds on to sunk costs. I have no qualms about dropping 300 on a player 1 week and then he's off my team the next. Well, maybe not the next, but maybe the week after. Look at Junis. I was off that fast. I mean, obviously that wasn't hard to see. The handwriting was on the wall there. But I know, yeah, some players hold on. They feel like, oh, I spent, 20% on this guy. I got to give him at least a month or whatever. You can't be doing that. You got to know when it's a bad buy and just be able to move on and start churning your rosters and picking up new players. So, yeah, that's definitely something that I know early on when I first started playing, I held guys too long just because I felt like I needed to, just because I spent so much money on them. Now I don't even think twice about it. Yeah, I'll drop them fast and furious.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to go about it. And again, that's another thing I've learned since you whooped my ass and got your overall title a few years back. I tell that story so many times on my show. Like, I was in that league and I'm, what the hell? That he just, you smoked the entire room. It was unbelievable. Like wire to wire, just complete domination in that league. And I'm like, I think it was my first year playing the OC. I'm just like, oh, this is awesome. But it's a learning curve. I learned from playing in those formats. And I am much more aggressive in letting guys go. Like Ryan and I talk about it a lot on Bubba and the Bloom. And Ryan does a lot more 15s. I'm slowly doing more 15s, but I still prefer my 12s. And in 12s, there's a lot more options to just replace a guy with. And I'm not afraid to be wrong in those options. Like, I'll miss a few. That's just life. But I think more often than not, dropping a dude, pays off in the long run in these 12s, because you're just hurting yourself. And with all those options in the wire, it's just crazy not to. So we'll pivot to the rest of season talk now with said discussion. You mentioned it earlier that, if you're, 800th, you're not winning the overall. Definitely not happening. But let's say you're, I don't know, there's a lot of ways to look at your top 100, your top 300, top 500. Like, that's for the overall. And if you want to take it down to a macro, a micro level, just for your own leagues, like, hey, I'm ninth place right now. How are you attacking your team to improve it? Like, how statistically, I guess, analyzed are you making things right now? Are you still just looking for an overall good player?
That's a great question, Bubba. Yeah, I track all my teams. So I know where, I'm trying to improve weekly, right? In which categories. End of the day, though, there are just teams. I have an OC. It's like my worst one, sitting like 11th. I don't know. It's 1500th play. I don't even know where it is. I'm like, the team's dead in the water. Like, I'm going to still try and see if I could cash in that league, but I'm not looking at the overall standings. I'm looking at inside the league. Where can I gain points? Where can I jump up to possibly, cash in this league down the road? But outside of that, I do have a lot, like, the overall contenders. I'm still looking. Like, I don't want to paint the picture. If you're, if you're not top 100 now, you don't have a chance. Of course you have a chance. OCs, I would probably say, we're end of May. You want to be somewhere in the top 500 right now, and that's probably pushing it. Top 500, I'd be okay. Mains, I think you're probably top 250-ish. I think you're still alive. I think it's kind of just looking at your team and being able to be realistic about your team and when to stop even trying to shoot for the overall and just try to gain points inside the league and cash in your league. Because end of the day, I mean, you can't be chasing something that's not a realistic goal. So you kind of got to be true to yourself and true, what you're looking at and just kind of, pivot and try to cash and, something that's feasible and just give up that overall dream at some point. I'm not saying that that point is now, but for a lot of teams, it should be now.
It should be for some. That is 100% sure. Like the realization that the overall is out of it, and see, you know, I like the idea of the overall. I've never had success with it, so I just do my thing and try to cash money where I can. If I run hot, I run hot. That'd be great. Like you and others have had success in the overall, so I know you guys have your strategies on how to attack things as the season goes along. But let's say we're sitting here. It's almost June 1st now. We got about 3.5 months to go, 4 months to go, and you're looking at your roster. How are you attacking the waiver wire, though? Are you still trying to get the next best thing, or are you like, when do you start looking at statistics more so, I guess, should be the answer, because that'll affect your waiver wire, obviously.
Yeah, that's a good question, too. And for a lot of my good teams in the past and teams that really contended in overalls, I've heard, you know, owners say, too, where you're strong, you're really strong in one category, so you don't think you need to go after guys on a waiver that might be strong in that same category, right? Let's say you have a great pitching staff, your ratios are awesome, and there's a stud, you know, call-up. You're like, my team, I'm doing pretty well there. I don't really need to go too much for that player. Those are the guys I go after even harder when my teams are that good, because I want to not only stay that, you know, where I am, I want to just crush the competition, basically. So don't ever be complacent, right? If you think, you know, because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, you might lose your ace. You might lose two pitchers, right? To who knows? So to me, you always want to continue improving your team at all costs, and especially the teams that are, you know, doing well in these overalls. You want to make them as strong as possible. And that's one thing I always do. I try to make my strong teams even stronger. And I'll even go even, you know, more aggressive on the wire when it looks like, whoa, why did he bid on this guy? You know, his staff is, you know, top 5% staff in the tournament. Why is he going crazy for this stud call-up pitcher? Well, I don't want to, you know, run the risk that I lose a guy, and I just want to keep pounding these other teams and make my, you know, my standing that much greater against these other competitors. So to me, that would be my one word of advice is don't get complacent. If you're doing well, if you're leading overalls and you see a difference maker on the wire, you should go all about and try to get that player, even if you're crushing the overall right now. That's how I.
Yeah, you don't want your league mates to get him either. So that
right
has a big factor to it. You mentioned like your ace can go down, like any like injuries, hitter, pitcher, so on and so forth. I guess how do you analyze if you're holding on to a player? Because like you mentioned, you have three catchers, which means you're holding on to an injured one most likely, or you're still a Goose fan, one of the two. there's pitchers that are getting hurt all the time. Like you got Matthew Boyd, who's going to start rehabbing. But then you got, like I said, I'm stashing Blake Snell. We're still 4 months out. So eventually there's a point in the year where that's probably still crazy talk to some. How do you approach the stashing of said players? Minor leaguers aren't really stashed anymore. So it's primarily your injured players.
I don't mind it. As long as it's not impacting your weekly lineups, right, and you're able to do so, and you know you're still competing in the categories you want to compete in, I see no issue with stashing guys. In fact, I would advise that you should do that if you're able to contend and compete with your healthy guys on a roster. I have no qualms, no reservations about stashing guys who might actually be league winner types, right, down the road in August, September. So. I'm not against that at all. In fact, I think that's a good move. As long, like I said, it doesn't, you know, prohibit you from doing any kind of moves within a week or starting, you know, a healthy lineup, for sure. I'd rather have a difference maker in, you know, July, August, September, than starting some scrub or stashing some scrub on my bench as like a, you know, a 10 starter who I know is, you know, a 4.30 ERA, 1.30 WHIP guy, just, you know, eating innings. So, yeah, no, I'm definitely for that.
On kind of the, it's not the flip side, but a different way of looking at players to add, like with the starting, with the relief pitching situation, such a disaster. Starting pitching has been quite messy as well. There's a lot of these, like, high leverage, multiple inning relievers. Is that ever on the table for you? Because, like, some people are fine with it. Other people think it's just a waste of a roster spot because you're limiting your chance for, like, certain counting stats. How do you go about those kind of longer inning and have some are like openers, some are middle relievers, so on and so forth, that could bring like three good categories.
Yeah, I'm not too big on that, to be honest, Bubba. I know Grant Taylor was a popular ad this week too, right?
Very popular.
I mean, yeah, if the guy's not going to get me a win, he's not going to get me a save. You know, you are wish casting a lot, throwing him out there, you know, during a week, right? He could throw an inning, you know, with a strikeout and then, you know, with a walk. And you're sitting there like, all right, what did that do for me really, right? End of the week. But, you know what I mean? If there are seven games on the schedule, maybe against weak teams, you know, I don't hate it, especially if you're in a bind. Like, I wouldn't mind throwing a guy like that over, you know, a shitty, you know, seventh starter, right, in those kind of situations. But generally speaking, I'm not too keen on starting middle reliever types, especially because, like you said, you're likely not getting a win, you're likely not getting a save, and you're likely not getting big Ks. So you're kind of, you know, just hoping and praying that he backs into something there.
Yep, no, that's the tricky part, and that's where I'm with you. Like, in 15s, pitching's been so bad. In 12, you should hopefully be able to find something with a pulse that could help you. But in 15s, yeah, it's been a back and forth like conundrum, I guess. And that also leads me to like churning your roster as the season goes along. Like right now, you should have some establishment going on. Like, it shouldn't be crazy, but as the season goes on, as you start noticing certain statistics you're trying to attack, so your bench is built differently now, like we kind of talked about earlier. So you're churning through it, weekly fab. You're talking about OCs. You can get a bunch of dollar guys as the season goes along. How are you approaching churning your – like, how aggressive are you at churning your roster? I know it's team dependence, the easy answer, but just from, like, on average, are you, like, really aggressive to keep moving things, or is it more of a – I guess what's out. I don't know. It's kind of an open-ended, weird question, but like, people sometimes, again, get complacent with a roster, and that's not always a good thing.
Yeah. My rule of thumb is like, I'm turning and burning every week, unless the guy is like a proven commodity, right? And you kind of know what he is. I'm not really trying to hold guys that aren't, you know, those proven commodities, right? And you might try to catch a heater here and there, but yeah, no, I'm constantly churning that roster every week, even in dollar days. You know, I'll drop four or five guys, you know, on an OC every week, and just trying to maximize at bats and, you know, whether it's closer or specs, whatever. You know, I'm just never taking a week off, especially in that format. Now, the main event is a little more, you know, difficult to do that.
More buttoned up.
Yeah, you can't churn and burn in the main event. You just can't, because there's nothing on the wire. You unfortunately have to wait on guys and just hope they turn it around, right? So and I like to say this too, like, the main event is very different in the respect where I think the main event, you win your draft at the draft table. That's how, to me, it's a lot harder to draft a subpar team in the main event and improve yourself on the waiver wire throughout the season versus an OC where you can fill those holes throughout the season. There's a lot more value to be had throughout the course of the season. The main event, if you flop at the draft table, or, you know, you get crushed with injuries. I had a main a couple of years ago. I think it was a Vegas main. I had six of my top nine picks all got hurt. It was Buxton, I don't know, O'Neill Cruz. It was at least five or six guys in my first top 10 picks were like toast in the first couple months. And it just had no chance. It's hard to come back in a main event. People that play in the main listening to this know what I'm saying. It's like, you know, if you get crushed by injuries and you just have guys underperforming, it's very difficult to win that league, let alone cash. So I think it's just really format dependent, and the OC gives you a lot more leeway in that respect.
Yeah, that's one reason why, like, again, I'm starting to play more 15s. I appreciate them. It's a different animal. I just like my 12s because, like, you can always – well, I wouldn't say always, but there's a lot of chances to continue to – if things go wrong, you can fix things or attempt to fix things, where, like you said, in a 15, if, like, even if you don't lose six guys out of the first – if you lose, like, your ace – you're already by the eight ball. Like, it's just minor little things like that really, really can hamper things. Not saying it's not, like, impossible, but you got to have different approaches to fix that. And it's really uncomfortable is the way I'll say it. And
if you have a lot of holes on your main event team, just patching those up is just a tough endeavor. It really is. Cause like there's 15 teams, right? Versus the 12, there's 14 other owners vying for the same guy you are. All these other teams in your leagues have holes too. So is that much more competitive on these waiver wires? It's just a different animal. And like I said, yeah, I mean, if you really got to crush the draft at the main event, and that just gives you the foundation you need to at least be competitive. And then you could kind of supplement that with the waiver wire and savvy pickups and whatnot. But if you get screwed at the draft table in the main event, it's going to be a long summer.
Overall versus just your individual league, you obviously want to win your league to win some money, but you're playing for the overall, of course. There's a lot of people that, you know, put the entry fee up and they're like, hey, I just want to win my league and get, you know, a few grand back and call it good, which is always the fine plan of attack as well. How do you go about, your week to week as the season goes along? Like, because some of you guys are super sharp on how to analyze the overall, because it's just a different animal. You look at, hey, this save just gave me like 17 points over here, and then this thing over here. Like, it's all over the board. Where like in an individual league, it's pretty easy to see what's going on. Like, you got this down. So how are you attacking your team week to week, especially like in another month or so, when you really get a good feeling if you have a chance for an overall?
Yeah, it's just tracking those categories. It really is. It's just going team by team, and I have all my category points for every category listed in my files there in my tracker. So, I see what, you know, how deficient I am in one category versus all the rest. And, you know, there are teams I know that are probably dead in the water, or, you know what I mean? There's too many holes to plug. But there are teams where, you know, you can definitely squint and see if, you know, you have, you know, a hot month here or there, you could kind of get back into the mix. That's like the one main I have, or, you know, I have that foundation, I have that offense, and I'm just waiting for it to catch fire. And I think that's a team that's going to rise, and it might make some noise down the road. But you got to keep grinding, man. You have to, if you have contenders, if you look at your team, right, there's a lot of fake contenders out there still that are sitting pretty high up, and you look at the team, you're like, how is this team this high? I've had a couple of those myself, and it's you know, it's going to fall at some point. You got a bunch of guys overperforming, or you're just striking, you know, every heater, you know, off the waiver wire, and you know, you haven't had any blowups or very few so far. Like, you know, you're probably at your peak, or you're probably overperforming. But then there's teams that, you know, that have the goods, and are underperforming. And those are the teams that, if they're still, you know, performing overall decently and has room to grow, those are the ones that I really target and try to capitalize on improving those teams moving forward.
No, that's very interesting. You track yours. Do you have like Excel files, like individually? Do you have like a program that you've built, or how do you? You don't have to give this complete secret sauce, but are you a caveman that just like puts his stats in every week, or do you have like a full on, like, you're scraping data and like, are you Phil the show? Or are you more like me, I guess?
No. I mean, I'm pretty proficient in Excel. So I have formulas where I'll just enter in my total category points each week. So I have the total number of points, right? The maximum points for each category. And then I'll plug in where each of my teams stand in each of those categories after each week. And it'll take the difference from where the top team is minus where I'm at. And then it'll red out or show me the teams that are, you know, this far back, right? Or I'm looking for variances above a certain amount. And then I'll go hyper-focus on those categories where I see that red on my file. So, perfect. It's kind of arbitrary, but it works.
No, for sure. It definitely works. As long as you can know where you need to focus on, that goes a long, long ways. So this season, we started out talking about the season. Like saves are a disaster. We know that. That's like you're just hoping to find one guy that can be consistent and see where it goes from there. What offensive category or categories has been the hardest so far for, I guess, you this year, or just kind of watching in general? Because, like, some guys can say it's power, some guys say it's speed. It's always something. Like, for you, with a handful of 12s and 15s, like, what are you seeing to be a kind of the biggest standout statistically?
Yeah, I think it's power. I think for sure this year it's power. Like, a lot of the elite sluggers just aren't putting those numbers up, right? I mean, look down a list, like Alonso. I don't even know what is, you know, I have a lot of Pete Alonso. What is he? I'm looking at him right now. He's got 10 homers. All right. It's not terrible, but, you know, it's still kind of low for him. There's a lot of guys.
No Tatis, just, so you're good.
Yeah, Tatis, yeah. I mean, Devers, what, has, you know, 5-6 homers, something like that?
Yeah,
it's just the power across the board seems like it's way down this year. Unless you have Murakami, right? And
him and Schwarber.
Schwarber, yeah. Jordan Walker. I mean, you got a few guys here and there, but I think for the most part, the guys you were taking, you know, the top of the draft have just not provided that power for the most part. So I find myself, my teams are a little deficient there. I think speed is more available than it has been in the past. To me, it's batting average and power. And I think batting average too is way down there. Life baseball. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty glaring. Like, I have a bunch of teams in the 240s and whatever, and they're like mid league in batting average. So yeah, batting average and power seem to be way down this year.
It's really, really bad. That is for sure. Any other thoughts on or strategies that listeners could utilize for the rest of their season? I have a listener question for you, but anything else we could potentially mention for them? I think we covered quite a bit of it.
Yeah, just kind of what we touched on before. It's like, you know, keep attacking categories that your teams are deficient in, but also know, you know, there is a point of no return. Like, you know, if you're sitting there in July and you're way, way back in the standings, focus on your league. You need to know when to pivot. Don't even look at the overall, you know, that's just wasting effort in my eyes. So you're better off just looking at your league and seeing what you need to do there in cash and trying to move up inside your league. And if you are contending for overalls, you have to be conscious, obviously, of other contenders. You might if you play in multiple leagues, you know, I like to play defense. If I see other guys I'm contending with in the overall and they're in other leagues of mine, maybe where I'm not doing well, you know, I'll outbid them on guys if I still have money left, that is. But I'll try to block them from getting players to improve their team in the overall. So you kind of be, you know, cognizant of who you're competing against. And if they're in one of your other leagues, you know, don't be afraid to block them on some key free agent pickups down the road. That's more along, you know, the August, September timeframe. But that's just like a, you know, an end of season strategy there is, especially if you're contending the overall, you have to know who's around you, what leagues, you know, they're in. And if you're in other leagues there, is to just, you know, keep the good players away from them if you can.
For sure. Listener question from the Discord here from Mailman Mike says, you kind of hit on this, but they were curious for like a specific. So what categories do you think are the hardest to make up ground in at this point of the season? Obviously, when ratios stabilize, that's a different thing. But what's like right now, 4 months to go, what do you think the hardest category is to make up?
Oof. I would probably say power again. Well, it depends also like which format. I mean, the main event, I would probably say power just because there's not much out there. And if you don't have it on your team, you're likely not going to get it on the waiver wire. OCs, I would probably say batting average then, because I feel like there's more power guys available on the wire. But it's one of those two categories. Those are usually, at least this year, I feel like the two toughest ones to gain.
Yeah, average is so tough. That's why, like, somehow Nick Gonzalez, Miguel Andujar, like, they're intriguing because it's just so hard to find. But they don't give you anything else. Like, they're empty, so it's tough to even stomach that in a 15, but like it brings a lot that you can't find elsewhere. That's for darn sure.
Well, that's why too, like everyone bags on Luis Arraez, but I mean,
Yeah.
He's kind of pretty damn valuable this year, right? I mean, he's hitting, what, 320 something. He's even got a couple homers, a couple steals.
Yep.
I mean, that's a very valuable guy in the 2026 fantasy format.
Yeah, I had a conversation with a really good player over the weekend about Luis Arraez. I guess I just never watched him enough because he wasn't on my team. And I just, like, you know, you read the stats, you do the stuff, and watching him with the Giants now, I'm like, he is awesome. Like, every time he comes up, you're shocked when he doesn't make contact. And he makes a lot more loud contact than you think. It might not always go over the fence, but he hits the ball well, a lot. Like, he really surprises me. Is he still my cup of tea in a draft? Probably not, but I should change my thoughts maybe, because I know it's a one-year thing, and this could change next year, but it's really interesting to see how good of a player he actually is.
Well, not only that, too. I mean, he's hitting, what, second in a lineup? So you're getting the 320 average at 650, 700 plate appearances, right? So it's even that much more valuable to have that asset. So, and if he chips in, I don't know, 6-7 homers, you know, 6-7 steals, I don't know, 80 runs. I mean, I don't know. He's in this climate, that plays.
Plays a lot. It plays a lot. So I like that comment on Luis Arraez quite a bit. He's very, very surprisingly entertaining. But all right, man, we're going to wrap it up there. Always a pleasure chatting with you, my friend. We'll have to do this again sometime in the next, you know, month or so, and see where things land and really tell people how they can attack their teams when they're 900th overall.
Hey.
I'm just joking. But anything else you want to talk about before we head on out of here?
Nah, I think we covered a lot, Bubba. As always, I appreciate you having me on. You know, you're my favorite in the business. I think you do a great job, and I'm always happy to talk ball with you. And, you know, if you want to have me on late in the season to rain on some more parades, you let me know. Hopefully it's not my parade I'm raining on, but
I might do it from our page, from me and Bloom's Patreon. I might have people blindly submit their rosters, and I'll let you rate them to see if they have a chance.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah.
Like, that might be a phenomenal show. I'm just throwing it out there. Like, if we do that maybe like August 1st ish around there, I think that has potential to be very entertaining.
That'd be great.
I'm going to start brainstorming that one, but we will, that can be just pure gold. But until then, make sure you follow the Guilds on Twitter at @the_guilds. The Twitter account alone is pure entertainment, let alone the good info he spews out to you, because he's always got some. And pretty soon you'll be winning football too, so watch out. That'll be coming your direction. But you can find me on Twitter @BDIntric. And until next time, Bench with Bubba, episode 856. Catch you later.